very key element as part of the community radio to be involved with this, because we do have a commitment to serving our community for its health and public safety. And this is a key element that every radio station should be involved with. There are hierarchies of radio stations. We won't go into the major details of that, but you can find out who your PEP is, your primary station. When you're setting up your EAS systems, your emergency alert systems, this is a federal mandated responsibility as broadcasters to inform the public of any kind of impending disasters that might affect your community and your listeners. And the reason this was developed, I'll give you just a brief history, was back in the late 40s, there was very major concern that there was no way to communicate across the nation the potential invasion of our borders, specifically World War II, and Germany had U-boats, you know, pretty much sailing in and getting in under the radar, and off the coast of California, they were spotted, and there was no way to tell anybody other than broadcasting on the air that these boats were potentially coming on our shores. As a result of that, we've expanded quite a bit. We have encountered many opportunities, shall we say, through experiencing disasters that we can improve our service to our people, our fellow brothers and sisters, if we tighten our networks up. When I made my first managerial decision as a baby broadcaster, it was a year, I believe 1994 was the year in which we had in Santa Fe, New Mexico, an incredible disaster that potentially could have cost millions of dollars in loss, which... Who pays for those losses? Who do you think pays for those losses? Taxpayers. As well as loss of life and property. In 1994, we had the Los Alamos fire. Los Alamos Labs, if you're not familiar with it, is where they discovered and created the A-bomb. And they had all sorts of nuclear testing sites within the areas. The tech areas were very hot with radiation, even though they say they're not. We know better, right? And so we had a prescribed burn. And one thing that I highly, highly ever recommend all of you all, and I will swear by this by a couple of reasons. Number one, when you decide where you're going to get your weather reports, NOAA.gov. NOAA. Those are the people you get your weather reports from. Their system that they have, at least from, I haven't been updated on how quickly their refresh rates are right now, but back in the day when I was doing that kind of work, their weather reports are updated every 15 minutes, and they use about 15 more samples. They have professional meteorologists that's all they do is take a look at weather patterns and come up with scenarios of what's going to happen, what's going to happen, what's going to happen.
I presume you're going to tell us where to get these reports and register and all that stuff.
NOAA.gov, type it in.
Just go right to their website, Sam.
You put in your zip code, you get your link, you make a permanent link on every computer in your studio.
It's the same as weather.gov, right?
Yeah, weather.gov, either one.
But is that something that comes, how does it proceed?
You will actively and consciously check it. Whenever you decide in your program schedule, you will check the NOAA weather.
Okay.
Okay, so the Los Alamos fire, just a brief example. We had 14,000 people on that mountaintop with only one road. I had a fellow broadcaster who had his own mom and pop station up on that hill, and when the prescribed burn came in, we were like, what are they thinking? Okay, whatever, we're going to cover it. It's news. It was my news day. We'll cover it. We'll see what goes on. So about 11 o'clock, I'm getting calls. I'm calling Mark up there saying, what is going on here? And he's like, I don't know. They're really going to, let this fire go. And sure enough, within a few hours, it was out of their control. It was a prescribed burn. That's the way they manage clearing the underbrush there, and it got away from them. The wind picked up, and it got away from them. Fire came racing across the mountain towards the labs, which was filled with nuclear waste, as well as, you know, hot stuff happening right then and there. So when Mark set up, he offered his place to be the command center when people were coming in, especially the emergency managers coming in, and they came in with gear and everything else, and they set up right in front shop. They used his studios as well as their own equipment and gear and everything else when they load in. It's an amazing scene. And so the command center was right there. During the time of the start of that fight, he was going to lose his transmitter in White Rock. And he called me up and he was like, Don, I'm going to lose the transmitter. I'm not going to be able to get out to the people. I'm not going to be able to tell them what to do or how to go or anything like that. I turned around and I said, absolutely not. Tell them to switch to 90.7 FM. I threw the Gentner and we went broadcasting for 3 days straight without a break. I preempted all programming. I made that decision on my own. And that was my responsibility, for which we were awarded by the New Mexico State Broadcaster Associations for saving lives. Okay? As a manager, that is your prerogative. You have a right, and you are responsible for controlling that transmitter and the programming that goes out. Period. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce some other experts in the field who experience this but only on a professional level, as well as also in a very, very highly active area. Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Keith Morgan. I'm the Story County Emergency Management Coordinator. Started the job about 3 years ago. Already have experienced 2 presidential disaster declarations. And I'll cover this.
Yes. Okay.
And yeah, I'm Bear, and I'm with KMUD in Northern California. And the emergencies that we primarily deal with are earthquakes and fires. And it, you know, obviously it depends. You know, we have a news department, and I know everyone in this room has different level of resources that they can pull on. Some of you aren't even on air yet. Some of you have staff. Some of you don't have staff. It's all volunteer. So what I'd like to talk about during this workshop is, you know, how we do it with our resources, but how you might be able to pull it together with just a couple of people who are willing to not sleep for many hours and blah, 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 blah.
So I think what we'll do is we'll start with how did that magic work? Like I was talking about the relationship with Mark Bentley and setting up the command center. There are certain key elements that are going to trigger, keywords that will trigger the response from the emergency managers that give you some credibility and validity of the scope of work that you're going to do with them. You want to know your emergency management team in every state and every county.
Well, first off, I'm going to take you from big to small when we're talking about emergency management. And then I'm going to focus in also, look specifically at emergency management during a tornado. Every emergency is going to be a little bit different, warning time, scale, scope, and all that other. But the tornado will give you an example of what we deal with an awful lot around here. But we have winter storms and all sorts of different events. First off, what does emergency management do? Anybody got any ideas? Anybody ever talked to their emergency manager before? Okay, so what's emergency management do?
Well, for the Office of Emergency Management, you know, they have different ones county by county. So,
correct.
You know, we serve several different counties. And basically, when the floods were happening in Boulder last September, Office of Emergency Management's website was keeping us posted on road closings and other developments, about how to direct people to go to shelters, what mm-hmm. actions to take.
Was emergency management the people putting the sandbags down out front?
Well, you know, I was broadcasting about the disaster from Denver, and so my understanding was that they were just spreading information. I don't really know.
And that's a key point. She talked about the folks out front. We call them an incident commander. They're the people that are doing the actual work out there. Emergency management, We coordinate between, at least in this county and in this state, and it's different from state to state, but our main job is to coordinate between jurisdictions. The incident commander might be your fire chief or somebody like that that's doing the real tactical work there, saying, well, we're going to take care of these structures first and we'll worry about those afterwards. We don't run the show. What we do is we try and, after those different agencies have run out of resources, we try and help them get the resources. So we're kind of the interface, maybe between jurisdictions, maybe between counties if they're set up at a county level, and they may be set up differently in different states. And then we're supposed to be the interface when they start going up to the state and up to the federal level, so that there can be some prioritization in that area on where the resources go. It's the design is to enhance efficiency and effectiveness of our response to drive down the cost, so that not every jurisdiction has to have all the same equipment that might get used once every 10 years along the way. So one of the main things we're trying to do is work with the jurisdictional executives and set priorities for that event. It requires us to gather information, evaluate that information, and then to work again with these mayors and county officials to say, okay, I've got requests for five pumps. I've got three coming in. One's going to be here in an hour. Where does it need to go to first? When do we do it? Well, we even start long before the event. That's how I became associated with KHLI. Preparedness. We look at it as almost a milking stool with three legs. We've got the people out there. The more we get people capable of taking care of themselves prior to a disaster, I'm lazy. That's the less work I have to do down the road if they can take care of themselves. Anybody know how long we typically say to be prepared for to be on your own?
72 hours.
A gallon a person for a day per, you know, 72 hours equals 3 gallons per person. Little things like that. Do you have your documents in order? Do you have a little bit of food? Do you have a light? Do you have a weather radio? That sort of stuff we work with people prior to, so that they're better able to take care of themselves.
Do you know how to shelter in place?
Do you know how to shelter in place? Do you know what shelter in place means? Go ahead.
We're in Lexington, Kentucky, and we have the privilege of having the largest store of chemical weapons remaining in the United States, 15 miles, both up and downwind from us. So we simulate with our emergency management the what's going to happen when the mustard gas comes to fruition. And like there are thousands of body bags stacked, and there's three or five counties together. I do it with my students at the university, but we're going to do these simulations as a, we're a public safety station at the so we've got two. But in our county, we give away free shelter-in-place kits. You can get them with the big plastic and the like 9/11, they told us to shelter in place, right? This is, so what are you going to do? Go out to Walmart and get the thick plastic and the duct tape and all that stuff? So these shelter in place kits even have the scissors to cut the, to cut the plastic.
Who has nuclear facilities nearby? Radiological disaster plan, something. We've got Dwayne Arnold. My counterparts that are in like a 25-mile area are required to run drills to include the warning aspects and information exchanges afterwards. So if you're nearby one of those, that may be another way that you may be asked to participate in getting the word out. So it starts with the preparation, and then we also might do it. Already you've mentioned one, hazard mitigation, or well, first off, hazard mitigation, which is where we try and educate the public beforehand to try and reduce the amount of damage we have. Down south, hurricane areas, put the hurricane straps on your house. Some of it's now done by ordinance and like that. But all these different things. Up here, hey, we get high winds that come quickly. Make sure you don't have your trampoline outside not pinned down so that it doesn't become the biggest frisbee in the world going across. So that's hazard mitigation. Prevent the damage up front. Planning, we bring all these jurisdictions together. What have you got? What have you got? What have you got? Catalog it all and then try and make sure that we can identify where the gaps are and work together with the different jurisdictions. Well, if you buy this and they buy that and it's within the response area that we need, then we'll be able to. And, oh, by the way, what kind of radio are you using? What frequencies are you on?
Correct.
You know, and we try and work those sorts of things out, again, to make efficiency. Training is the other part that comes upon. We try and run the exercises so people, we take these plans, we test them, and we find out that they don't work as well as we thought they were going to, go back in and do them over and over again. And that's part of the exercise part. And then we do education, which is, again, what I was talking about in that preparedness part. We also work with business. That's the second part of the triad, is working with business. It does us no good to have the citizens all safe and secure if they've got nowhere to work. Mm-hmm. Because then the long-term economic development or recovery of the area is impacted. And finally, there's that governmental aspect of it. So anybody got any idea besides me, a good-looking swab, the boner kind of guy, what does an EMA look like? How many do you think, how many are on the EMA staff, do you think, in your area? Do you know?
I really don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've got two people for Story County, and we are blessed. That is by and far the most. We're probably got, you know, probably the somewhere around fifth or sixth largest staff for accounting. Mm-hmm. In Iowa, you can have an emergency manager that only works 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And be compliant. He might also be the person working environmental health and this mm-hmm. and this and this. So we have much the same resource restrictions that you all do. Mm-hmm. And they're very, very understaffed when it comes to that. We're insurance. Nobody likes to buy insurance. Law enforcement, like that sort of stuff, deputies out on the road is much easier to justify. Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
Can you bring up the SECC at this point? How to find out who they are?
Usually you can find out who your EMA is by going on the county's website. Not always. Best thing to do is type emergency management and then put the county in, and hopefully you'll find their website. Hopefully they won't be too hard to find. Myself, in Iowa, we work for a commission. I am not a county employee. I work for a commission made up of the mayors of all of the communities, a board of supervisors representative, and the sheriff. Why would you think it would be that way?
As opposed to the county?
As opposed to being a county employee.
Networking, working together.
Network. Who am I working with? All the jurisdictions. If I'm just a county employee, then I don't have quite that responsibility to the mayor of Kelly down south of here that has 300 people.
That's right.
I had each community gets one vote, so the mayor of Ames has as much power as the mayor of Maxwell does when it comes to it. So, but every state is different as to the setup of their EMAs. My interface with the media, first off, begins with preparedness. Every spring, because that's when tornado season starts, we have a big push in Iowa, and we coincide with the statewide tornado drill. And we get severe weather preparedness out there, and we really push it from the state on down. As an event starts to build, then we start working with the media when it comes to warning. It might be a day out, hey, the weather tomorrow is going to be pretty unstable. We have the chance. Or there's a snowstorm coming, and you better be starting to make sure that you can last without electricity and things like that. We're providing them information for their own actions. That's the key, and that's what I want to stress. You can be a major part of getting the public to be a positive aspect of a disaster. You can provide them the information so that their actions contribute to the overall response as opposed to running counter to the response. Mm-hmm. We want to work with you, and that's where when I'm working with the media, this is what I want the public to do in order for them to be more safe. Mm-hmm. Move here, don't move there. Start this, don't do that. Don't get up, don't call 911. Mm-hmm. We know it's there. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're already saturated. Let our dispatchers get focused on doing what it is. That is the one really big message that I'd like to put out, is that you can help shape that reaction and save lives by doing it, getting people going in the right way. Part of that's rumor control also. I heard this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And with social media, that rumor can spread like wildfire and get mm-hmm. people going in a direction that is contrary to their own health and safety. And just, go ahead.
I was going to say, I just had a thought, like, you know, you just touched on that subject of how we as community broadcasters really affect the lives of people. You know, I'm not sure if everybody in here has had, like, the situation where you dealt with the disaster response at your respective stations, but about a year and a half ago, you guys might have heard about, I'm from Skagit County in Washington State, and you might have heard about the collapse of the I-5.
Mm-hmm.
Interstate 5 bridge.
Landslide.
What happened is it received so much attention because it was the main freeway from Canada down the west coast through to California that just came to a standstill.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is the bridge collapsed and, like, you know, traffic was, I mean, you had this major artery that was routed through our, you know, small town community.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, because of all of the phone traffic congestion, intermittent power outages at the time, like, our area was thrown into just complete confusion and chaos. Mm-hmm. And so, like, everybody was like, what's up? You know, like, what's going on? And since you couldn't even make a cell phone call a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Which we were talking about.
Because, you know, what happens is, like, after a major, you know, incident, you know, people are calling relatives, loved, like, hey, man, I saw what was on the news. Are you okay? Are you all right?
Are you on the bridge?
Yeah. Like, I got those calls. What happened is a lot of people, like, the light bulb turned on. You know, wait a minute. Like, let's turn on
the radio.
Let's turn on the radio. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, I had so many people on the Facebook that were, like, hit me up. And because actually what was crazy was this was just before my show when the bridge closed. And, like, what was really nice is I would have been on the bridge. Like, but I had something else to do before I came to the station, so I had somebody covering for me. And so, but he's speaking the truth. Like, when it comes to being community radio broadcasters, a lot of times in a disaster, there's no other source of information. You can't get phone. Sometimes you can't get internet coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're completely in the dark. But if you have, say, a car, or, you know, which everybody does in this day and age mostly, you go out to the car and turn on your local community station and get information about what's going on. Like, and a lot of people in our community did when this occurred. Like, and so what we did is we broke right into coverage. Like, I've got a hip-hop program, obviously, most of you know that. But we broke right into coverage about what's up, what's happening. Like, I had the Skagit County emergency management team off and on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we were calling back and forth, and they were relaying information and stuff like that. So now I wanted to share that, like, that, you know, we have a power
to
really make a difference and inform people, you know, in the event of a disaster.
That raises a question that I wanted to ask. The brother here was talking about how the emergency services were giving them information that they were updating out over the radio. If emergency management is one, maybe two people, and they're dealing with all this other stuff, if the phones are going in and out, how do they communicate?
I'll jump ahead to that one.
Yeah.
Because that is one of the key things. First off, limited communications capability. During a disaster, at least for our massive organization of two, what we're going to do is, if it's a rapidly occurring event, if we're both at work, my counterpart will probably stay at work, and I will go out to the scene to try and get a little bit better visibility on what's happening. If it's at night, what will happen is we carry enough radios like that. She will start operating out of her house while I'm en route, and then I'll set up operations and possibly bring her in. We have an emergency operations center that's at the county admin building that might be our primary location. I might be out on scene utilizing the radios that I have. But you can see that I've got limited capabilities. If the event gets large enough, I might try and activate a PIO. Anybody know what PIO stands for? Public Information Officer. And that's this is some of the terminology, and I encourage you to learn the terminology. There are incident command classes that you can take on the FEMA site. And there's one on the PIO, the Public Information. One of the things they stress is we're going to all use plain language. Right. I just threw out all these acronyms, FEMA, ICS, PIO, Incident Commander, and all that other stuff. I highly recommend that you go to the FEMA website. There's a class called ICS 100, Incident Command Structure 100. That will give you the basic terminology and understanding of how your folks out in the field are going to structure themselves. So that when you show up and you don't say, hey, who's in charge? Mm-hmm. Your credibility's down here. Right. Who's the incident commander? Or better yet, do you have a PIO? Mm-hmm. Boom, your credibility starts to go up. Here's a person who's going to integrate into my system. I don't have to start from ground zero.
But there's no time.
And there's no time. I don't have time for it.
Yeah. Right.
Now, I'll tell you how I interface with the press around here. I have a pretty good relationship with a couple of folks from the Ames Tribune. We modified our outdoor warning sirens policy. I went down and personally talked to the meteorological staffs for all three of the major networks around here so that I got to know them on that level. I do give my cell phone number out to a limited number of people, and they can call me, but they understand. They call, if the phone's busy, leave me a message. If you text me, I'll get back to you when I can. It's not that I like any news outlet any better than any other one, but just your point, I'm extremely busy. Mm-hmm. And when my priority is life safety, mm-hmm. stabilizing the situation, mm-hmm. and then property comes after that. If you fit into those three priorities, you get the priority. If I can save lives by getting the word out immediately, we're evacuating, go this route here, don't go that route mm-hmm. here, and do this, I'll talk to you. If it's mm-hmm. how many houses are damaged and I'm still trying to give people, the resources to save lives, mm-hmm. I'll get back to you when mm-hmm. I can. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we've started to do is we have Facebook. And the secondary person might post. Mm-hmm. Again, we don't go to Facebook if you're looking to get the warning on the tornado coming towards your community. It's not going to happen mm-hmm. because we're busy taking in storm spotter reports, getting mm-hmm. that down to the National Weather Service, mm-hmm. working with our first responders. So we warn them, do not expect that mm-hmm. to be your primary. Mm-hmm. Another thing that you might check.
NOAA should be your primary. Is that right?
Yeah.
NOAA, National Weather Service, and as a deal, at least in this area, mm-hmm. They have what's called NWS CHAT.
Yeah.
National NWS. Weather Service right. CHAT, which is a CHAT site. Mm-hmm. They will, the National Weather Service will actually transfer information. We have a separate one mm-hmm. for us emergency managers that we're working with them, turn in storm spotting and like that, and getting it to them, and they may transfer it on over so you can keep up to date on what's happening. 3-inch limbs are down in this community over here. This has been reported. Mm-hmm. Take it with a grain of salt. Those are unverified reports an awful lot of the time. Now, again, another way that I work with the media is we change our outdoor warning sirens. Around here, they're known as tornado sirens. Mm-hmm. Well, a 70-mile-an-hour wind, which is not uncommon around here, mm-hmm. is the equivalent to an EF0 tornado. Mm-hmm. And we weren't blowing the sirens. And many times we said to ourselves, why? So we switched our policy up that we now will activate the sirens if it's indicated by the National Weather Service or by our storm spotters over 70 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. I made an agreement with the folks down at down in Des Moines, our main metro media area, that I will try and get over to their side because I have access to both sides, put in there Story County, blown sirens, these communities due to straight line winds. Because when Polk County did it, they got all sorts of, well, we don't know why the sirens are going off. There's no tornado there. So again, it's a bit of this to keep the public informed. My main point is, I don't care what's activating the siren. You should not care what's activating the sirens. Get inside. Find out that way. Right. But still, we recognize that it helps reduce the confusion during a disaster with a little bit of effort. But we have a huge problem balancing those different things. Mm-hmm. I don't use Twitter. Why would you say that? First off, being compared to caveman, I don't like that sort of stuff anyway.
It's a distraction. It's a distraction. He can't do his work if he's sitting there typing into a phone. It just doesn't work.
It's a distraction. We started from the point of, can I feed that beast during a disaster?
Right.
And the answer was no. Now,
right.
The two of us, I can't do it.
Right.
So therefore, I don't use it during the normal situation because people would get an unrealistic expectation of what they're going to get out of Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm on the Twitter. He'll tell me what's going on Twitter.
Right.
I can't do it. So instead of venturing into that and then having them writing a check I can't cash,
right.
I didn't even go that direction. Now, law enforcement here in Ames and Iowa State PD, mm-hmm. they have enough people. And Ames has got a full-time PIO that can keep that sort of stuff up. They use Twitter effectively.
Twitter.
Because that's the focus of their job at that point. They're the communications officers. That's another person that you may want to try and contact with, is a communication officer. Because that, again, that's what they're focused on, and it frees the teams and the crews up to be able to focus on saving life and property.
And it can get out, as opposed to having... What would you say is the relationship between us and Des Moines when it comes to media? Where are our three media outlets, our major media outlets?
Mm-hmm.
They're in Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
They do cover us quite well up here, especially if it's a slow news day. If it's not a slow news day, our capability to influence them... If we were the biggest show in town here in Ames,
mm-hmm.
I would be... If KCCI and WHO were based out of here... I would probably have more of a capability of influencing. I don't from here. So that's some of the other mm-hmm. stuff where the social media is very useful in disaster mm-hmm. because, again, if you get people linked into those, the people who care, the 800 and some likes I have on my webpage are linked into my Facebook page because it deals with Story County. They're Story County folks. So it's a bit of an interaction. During the flooding, they found, my counterparts found it very important to monitor Twitter and Facebook. Why?
That's where the rumors are. When you mm-hmm. ride up.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. Rumors was a big part of it. And we get, again, feedback from them. 190th at 65 is flooded now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're drawing it on in there. But our interaction, again, was to get that communications out there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, this isn't true. Here's the facts on what's going on. So you can start to see where there's a multiple path for communication that didn't used to be there in the past when it comes to social media.
Right. I'd like to hear from you, Keith, as well as from radio people in the room who've had experience with disasters, thoughts on what information is sufficiently verified to go out with on the air. Something from NWS chat, you said take it with a grain of salt, but should we broadcast that? How about something you hear in the police scanner?
We're going to address that in setting up how to arrive on a scene and what you as broadcasters should be doing. We're just setting up the chain of responsibility right now, so you're understanding the language that you need in order to access some of this information at a higher priority.
I'll tell you one thing, though, from my perspective. Again, am I on the front lines doing this stuff?
No.
I will only tell you stuff that has come from the incident commander, and they say, release this information.
Mm-hmm.
You ask me, well, what do you think the incident commander is going to do next?
No, I
have not seen their incident action plan. I will not comment on that particular aspect to it. When I find that out, I'll let you know. Because, A, I don't want to step on the toes of the guy that's down there, and B, confusion... Well, he said this, and then it changes later on in a very dynamic situation, again, can be very negative. So I'm not trying to shove you away. I'm just trying to make sure I don't feed you the wrong information.
So we should not be trying to report news through you, get news from you. We should basically just be giving you a microphone to speak to the community.
We do like an interaction, though.
Yeah.
Depends on what's happening.
And it depends on what's,
yeah.
what's happening.
Different emergencies move slow. Yeah,
exactly. The flooding of 2008, 2010, and again, even that moved different paces. We have the Skunk River here that will flood within a couple of hours. But, you know, if you have questions, come to me. And I'll be completely honest with you. I know that. I don't. I don't have it verified. I'm not going to comment on things that I don't. If you hear things and you want verification on it, we can do that. Please use discretion. You know, if I give you my cell phone and it's not really that important, let me get a little bit of sleep at 2 a.m. in the morning. But, you know, we do look for an interaction, and hopefully we all have the same idea that we're trying to protect the citizens out there. So great questions, and it's a great start to things. You know, just two more things. What do you think about after the disaster is over? What do you think our interaction can be?
Oh.
It's no longer front page news in most places.
Say so talk about the things you did right, you know, and how people responded.
You hit my second point here. I like to recognize the agencies that have been valuable to us. This county has only got one full-time fire department, and that's here in Ames. Everybody else is volunteers. And the more that I can recognize those volunteers and what they do, the more likely we're to keep those volunteer organizations filled. So that's my secondary.
You need the word out about where assistance is needed, where people
that's
who
the second one.
Want to help can give their cash or do whatever.
You said something after my heart, and I'll just make a side plug. Cash donations. Please do not ever say, gather up your stuff and we'll send it on them. Typically, that is actually a drain on resources more than a plus when it comes to the number of people that we have to take to sort through that stuff to meet all the requirements on an inventory. It's just incredible. But it's recovery programs that are out there. You know, if you're low income, we have the Iowa Aid deal. If your income is 200% of the poverty level and below, and we have a grant program up to $5,000. Most important thing, go to this website and look at it, or call these people here and see if you qualify. Direct them to the right place. And why that's so important is because you are very focused in the area. This area covers Story County. If Story County may be covered under a presidential disaster declaration, Boone County isn't. And is, again, WHO really going to want to put much attention to something that's three or four counties out of their listening area? Give me the time to really get the information out there that go here, go there, find more stuff? No. And that's where the recovery aspect of it can be very important. But I recognize you also have very small staffs. That's where we're very much the same. Another important aspect on where you're different than my media outlets down in Des Moines is you probably don't have a meteorological staff. Just focusing on the tornado aspect of it. I'm really not going to point them to you during a tornado warning for information, quite honestly. Because John McLaughlin down with KCCI in Ames saying, hey folks, double Doppler is showing this hook here, which is likely a tornado. He's putting it out just about the same time National Weather Service is. So,
and I want to just want to back this up a second in our roles as community radio stations. There is also a chain of responsibility or chain of command in the assignment of the qualified radio stations. Okay, you're going to be hearing when you're building the station about your EAS and how you have to monitor this channel and this channel. Those two channels, or three channels, or four channels, depending on the area that you're living in, is they have been deemed certified by the Federal Communications Commission, as well as the state emergency managers, as what they call a primary input station. PEP, it's another PE, I can't remember the acronym, but that's your, you must monitor an AM signal and an FM signal. Okay, that's your two bands. Those are the two stations that have sworn a commitment to the public as well as to the government and the emergency managers that they are prepared, they are trained, and they are capable. And we can get into a couple of little stories about how that didn't work out so well, especially with Katrina, but for most in point, that's when you're going and buying your equipment and we're trying to tune that damn EAS machine. That's what you're doing. You're setting your station up with the top of the line. You're already ahead of the game than Joe Schmo on the street because you're monitoring those two stations. you're required to do so. That's why EAS even added LPFM situation and scenario is still required, because you're responsible as broadcasters to protect the health, the safety, and the lives of the community that you serve. That's a gimme.
Keith, I'm with KHOI across the street. Now, our signal covers Hamilton, Martin, Boone County. When say, for instance, the weather starts moving up north into Hamilton County, do we switch over to their people, or as the Story County person, are you then? How does that work? When it crosses county lines, do you switch over to different people?
I would not speak for Phil Queen, who is the person up there. I'll tell you, Phil Queen is one of those 20 hours a week guy.
Uh-huh.
So he is going to be even more saturated and have probably less capability. I would encourage you to try and establish relationships with him. I know you already talked with Dave over in Boone County. And that's where you get to know your emergency managers and establish with Phil, hey, what can I expect from you?
Well, I guess what I was asking is, when you're in the middle of something, say a tornado, which moves pretty quickly across county lines, if we start with you in Story County, do we stick with you, or do you stop your work at the county line and then we have to switch over to work with somebody else?
You would probably have to switch over, and the reason is not that I don't want to help you. My radios, because I'm tapping into the radios and the first responders in this area, communication capability, I don't have the ability to listen to his radios.
Do you have the ability to tell us, okay, it's moved on to the next county?
It would be, and I'll be honest, I probably wouldn't have time during a tornado to tell you exactly what the tornado is doing. Because
so
I am going...
So you don't track them on each other where the emergency is moving. You're dealing in your jurisdiction.
I am tracking it, but my concern at that time is what's happened, what's the damage, and everything else.
Is that where the NWS chat would come in?
NWS chat would be a good good tool for that.
Mm-hmm. If you don't have somebody on the ground.
If you don't have, and there's a lot of danger in having somebody on the ground around tornadoes.
Yeah.
But NWS chat would probably be a better place because, again, my focus at that time, I am going to have, when I monitor, I have NWS chat up. I have what we call GR Level 3 radar that I'm looking at. I'm also got two different radios going at the same time, and I'm also trying to keep track of what was happening. So I'm just not going to, if you called me at that time, you'd probably get a response about
so
3 hours later.
Yeah.
Have we got enough, do I need to move my storm spotters? Do I need to tell the storm spotters up ahead to watch out, get out of the way?
Yeah.
You know, if you were to call me, I wouldn't respond.
Just get that from the local TV station as long as they're still on the air. Because they will be tracking
it. Well, I'm not asking so much about actual weather reports. It's just whatever's being mobilized. Does it cross county lines?
They will track when it crosses the county lines. And he said when it crosses the county lines, you need to talk to the guy in the other county.
When you're talking about resources mobilizing like that, I wouldn't have visibility on that. So that.
Yeah.
So we're saying, we know the tornado went through, it's an hour afterwards, and again, I'm still probably too busy to even let you know what we've got mobilized, but if I had time, but it happened up in Hamilton County, I wouldn't really have much for visibility on that.
So you're not working with them directly when you're working with someone?
I might be calling Phil and, hey, what have you got for ambulances and like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's where we do have that interface.
EAS, so our stations are in Duluth, which is about 20, 25 miles away. Do we decide that that's decided automatically? Because if there's a disaster happening our way, they're not going to activate all the EASs in other directions from Duluth. We don't have any control over it? Or
EAS, at least here, is activated, in this area, would be activated down through Johnston, the National Weather Service down there. But let me make a pitch for something. Do you have a weather radio somewhere in your facility?
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the other way to tap into it and find out. Now, they're programmable. So when I program my weather radio so that I can know what's going on, I actually program for the county that's to the west, to the north, to the southwest, and to the west. Why would you say I don't worry so much to the east?
It's past.
Our weather's typically comes from the southwest moving to the northeast or from the north on down to the south. So just so I do get a little bit more sleep, I don't worry about those counties there. Something for you to look at. Where are your threats? What do you want to get activated for those? And they're cheap, and they're 24/7.
Someone talks about, you know, having people on the ground. And one thing that our experience at KMUD is like when there's an earthquake or a fire, thank God we aren't dealing with this tornado thing, which I think sounds way scarier than earthquakes. Earthquakes scare the shit out of me. But what, you know, listeners call up immediately to say, whoa, did you feel that? I'm in Shelter Cove and we felt this. And, you know, and 99% of the time when the earthquake hits, it's at night. There's no, the news director isn't there. Thank God the news director only lives a mile, 2 miles from the station now. In a real crisis, she can get there.
Right.
But that didn't used to be the case. But, and if it's not, you know, a huge thing, she's going to just leave it to the volunteers that are at the station.
Right.
And, you know, and so, you know, we have an unverified report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. And, you know, and you know, and me, everyone, well, you know, hopefully it came, but knows how to get on the computer and see, you know, start giving out. But, you know, right. Sunday night, she goes, well, I just got, you know, I heard it was 2.0. And then she gets a call immediately. No, that was way bigger than 2.0. She gets on a little while. She goes, okay. I've just, you know, lined it up. Yes, it was a 5.0. It was
from this source over here.
You know, within minutes. Right. But the most important thing was that she was calm.
Yes.
She was like, it's okay. You know, we haven't had any reports of damages yet.
Right.
You know, the phones are working. You know, I'll come back on again as soon. But, you know, the first thing, I wasn't listening to the radio. As soon as that earthquake hit, I turned on the radio.
Right.
You know, to find, well, where did it come from? What did, you know. The same with fires. We had volunteer programmers who had to evacuate their homes in this last fire. Mm-hmm. They were calling, you know, our news director. We're interviewing them about, okay, you know, when did you have to leave, and you know, how is this? And once again, the most important thing is to reassure everyone that you can, you know, one fire, people were calling, I was at the station, and they were just going, my God, it's so smoky, do I need to evacuate? I'm like, but where do you live? Well, yeah, it's really smoky there's no evacuation order, but, you know, if you can't breathe, you should go someplace else. You know,
and
but
that's all,
just, you know.
That calmness comes from training and knowledge, okay? And your public is going to look to you for that knowledge. So the training is very important. And one of the things I highly, highly recommend every LPFM station that's starting up and stations that are on the air, if you're not talking with your SECC, your State Emergency Communications Committee, and your signal coordinators, because you are responsible for the EAS, okay? Those are the two people that you, the two organizations that you want to remain in very close contact with. Because their finger is on the pulse. They are he.
Will you, the EAS, is that like an actual radio? Is that
it's
like
a box.
It's computerized now.
Didn't you? So, like this earthquake report that, you know, a listener called in and said, I felt the earthquake. My training for my people would be, go check your EAS box. If the EAS box is programmed for every kind of watch, warning, or hazard,
is it going to like print?
It used to spit tape out. Now it's all computerized.
But it also depends on the message.
Just a screen, a video screen.
No, it'll interrupt your service.
If it's major, it'll interrupt your service.
And guess what? For a 5.0 earthquake,
yes,
right.
It's like a little tiny tornado,
right?
Hook it into the system.
Yes, it's hooked right into the system. Right. You can't operate. That's why inspectors come out.
Right.
That's why you have broadcast engineers certify that everything is in place, because they test this equipment. They work with the signal coordinators to get the right frequencies, to get the right FIPS codes, which are codes that are used to identify what is it. Is it a tornado? Is it this? Is it that? Your Amber Alerts is also another real big one.
The 911 outages?
Yeah, the 911 outages is another one. Those are all determined by these dedicated ladies and gentlemen that are in the field and in the trenches every day. So when as much as it is a pain in the ass to program those EAS boxes sometimes, there's a reason for that. It's not just doing what somebody says. There's a reason for it. Your listeners' lives may depend on it one day. And we take that very seriously. I'm an operations manager by heart and by training. So I am a compliance officer also. So that's why I get real serious about this kind of stuff, because if we don't do this, who will? Okay? And the funniest part about all of this, I'm going to make a pitch for your organization as well, is that how much does it cost a year per taxpayer to maintain this kind of operation?
Ours is, we get about $90,000, so it's less than $3 a person.
$3 a person. And they'll come in, risk their own lives to save your ass. You can't beat that.
Me, personally, I'm pushing the other guys.
He's in charge of weeding them out, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You know, during, we had, go Sam.
You know, I was going to say, this is obviously serious business. I presume that stations normally have a nice little policy, and
yes.
Here's what we do in that case. Do we have examples of those that news stations might be interested in working on?
Sure. Yes. As a matter of fact, and I also have some guidelines that you can incorporate.
I can get some good stuff from our news director and email.
You want to put it on the conference website?
Yes, conference website. There we go. We'll put on get stuff on
what website?
Excuse me?
GRC2014.net. We're after the conference. We're going to hound all of the presenters to submit whatever documents they have on the website.
Because you guys have been doing this for a long time, and I'd hate to go out and try to create a policy.
Well, you're gonna want to get your bearings with some of the policies that we have, as well as your state and local authorities. They have policy. Your PEP that I was describing earlier, your primary input stations, they have policies. There are certain levels of command is the language that they use. And so your PEP station is on top of the bar. Their requirements are they need at least 3 weeks of generator capabilities, broadcasting, emergency medical response. I mean, a PEP station has incredible responsibilities, even to the point of cots in the basement. So those people know exactly what it will take for your level, your situation, where you're at. So that's why you want to make friends with them. That's why you want to hang out and talk with them. Get on their meetings. Get on their chairs. I chaired it in the state of Washington for the 5-6 years that I was there, because it was such a valuable service to the community. I mean, at $3 a head, you know, for the price of a McDonald's meal, you know, or something like that, you're saving the lives of potentially thousands. Right?
So should we? Okay.
I just wanted to say that I think that for some people, the use of Twitter can be really important. Even if Story County's not on it, I know my county is on it, and USGS is on it. Like I'm signed on to a Twitter feed called Every Earthquake.
Right.
Every shake I get.
Right.
I haven't lived in California for 6 years, but
you still get more shakes than I know, probably.
But the CDC also, if they were for some reason to quarantine airports or something, those guys are all, because they do have PIOs that they pay. At college, I teach these kids to walk out and make $60,000 a tweet.
Right.
How do I get into that?
Just Story County on the Twitter. But if you, and you can make a Twitter list, so you can make a list of emergency agencies, and you can just run that Twitter list.
Right.
Like, you can do it for
the website.
You can do it for the presidential caucuses, you know. Caucuses.
That's a good practice.
These guys,
that's good
Twitter does for people who are poor like us is it creates our own, like, AP wire that we don't have to pay for.
Right.
Feeding feeding information, as long as you know how to find a legitimate source, like NOAA.gov, they're on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know that you're not, even if it is a person on the street, sometimes that's a good tip, but you don't run straight to that.
No.
Right. So I recommend you use Twitter that way.
Yeah.
And we will draw off of Twitter. It's just that,
you can't have time to.
It's
got to be verified.
It's,
for us, the black community is really active on Twitter. Like, if I can get some information out on Twitter, and some of the people in the African American community can retweet that, then that's an inroads that we can get.
Right. And that's all based on the relationships that you've created. How do you think you base that relationship? Your credibility. It was the credibility of the information that you're releasing. Same thing here. Same thing with these organizations. When your finger is on the pulse with your state emergency chairs and your communications committees, then you will eventually build the relationship to the point that you will be in the know enough to share with the general public.
Very often, when something happens, people call KMUD before they call 911. We had someone call one night and said, you know, there's a power line down. Mm-hmm. It's a Sunday night. And we're like, okay. So we're like, okay, power line's down. Okay, we should report it to CHP.
Right.
So about 15 minutes later, a CHP car drives into the driveway. He goes, where's that power line that's down?
Exactly.
You know,
the
power goes out. People call
it's
us. You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, people just depend on us to find out for them why the power's out, get the power line back up. But, you know, I mean, it's pretty awesome. But
reminds me of, I think it was Atlanta last year, during the blizzard that shut down Atlanta, and a totally spontaneous Facebook and Twitter network came into being, so that somebody could say, I'm stranded here, and somebody else could say, okay, I can get to you, and it looked like completely spontaneous. How do you all and we all interface with that kind of situation?
Because if you've already established a relationship with these organizations and have had a representative from your state emergency management or county emergency management team come out, tour the facilities, open house it, sit down and talk with them, establish a relationship with your rep in your area, okay? You're going to be able to quickly read through the rumors and everything else to increase your credibility of what you're broadcasting on the air. Okay? Now, we had an incident in Hurricane Katrina, which we were going to have Katrina Radio. Bryce was supposed to come with us, okay? So, Noah, and I was actually on the SECC chair with one of the warning coordinators of that tornado, Ted Beener, and Tsunami Ted. He's the meteorologist for the Pacific Northwest area, who, when disaster hits like that, everybody's on board, you know, at NOAA. And, you know, a really funny anecdotal story about it was that I was there in July, kicking it with some friends who were living there and starting a restaurant. And it was the 4th of July, and she was like, oh, well, we should check the weather for it. And she went to WeatherBug. And I blew a gasket, and of course my operations manager persona came in, and it was like, you, Noah, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so she used Noah, and she was one of the first and the few people in the know. They started reporting that hurricane was going to touch down in the Gulf Coast, in the area very close to New Orleans, on Wednesday. Okay, Wednesday of that week, they had the modeling down to the point, almost pinpointed to where it would go.
Was this in New Orleans?
New Orleans. She was in New Orleans. She was in Metairie, which, you know, right over the Ninth Ward. Mm-hmm. You know, she listened, and she kept listening. And by Friday afternoon, she was like, that's it. Boop. School's out. She was a teacher. Her husband was starting a restaurant. She's like, I'm out of here. We got plane tickets. We're gone. Okay? Katrina hits. We so happen to have an SECC meeting a week and a half after the, not even a week, after Katrina hit. Everybody on the team, on my end, in Washington State, Ted looked like he'd been through a mill, and butter wouldn't melt in this man's mouth. Trained. I think all of you guys are trained that way, that, you know, if they're focused, the world could be crashing down. He was almost in tears. Nobody listened. Nobody listened. Why didn't anybody listen? We sent a team. They sent a team out 2 years prior to model what the hell would happen if the levees would break. Five city managers showed up.
Wow.
Okay? And so this is another reason why this is so important, to start making friends now with your emergency managers, so we can prevent the life and loss. Now, on the other side of that, about unpreparedness, was the PEP station was a Clear Channel station, right? It's supposed to be, oh, you know, we've got this all together. You know, PEP means we're the top notch. We're ready. We're capable of broadcasting through shit and hell. And it did not happen. They went down, did not have backup generators, did not meet the requirements, the basic requirements to remain on the air as a PEP station. Guess who did? WWOZ. Guess who WWOZ was? Bunch of hippies hanging out, broadcasting Geekosaurus Rex on the air because they had the capability. Because you know what? Every day they operate in crisis mode. Okay? They don't, you know, they do it with what they got. They remained on the air.
And kept moving.
And kept moving.
Kept moving.
And it kept moving.
Moved, that, also moved, had, the, moved the entire
right,
works to
right.
where it was dry.
Right.
Yeah.
Then, at that point, there was no reporting. There was still no reporting coming right from the dome there. Well, sure enough, we got some emergency clearances from the FCC to bring in a crazy engineer who was not joining us, unfortunately, Jim Ellinger, who's actually broadcasting from inside the Astrodome, okay? Because he knows how to set up
after
emergency
Houston,
communications.
And after everyone got moved to
yeah.
Houston, we're
yeah.
in Texas now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So did I understand you correctly that you were coordinating, or you were part of the coordination of the Katrina radio response from Washington State?
No, I was not. I wasn't part of the team. Well, I was trying to get in there myself. Because the chief engineer Entercom was trying to offer support to the Clear Channel station from Washington State. Yes, from Washington State. But Ted, who was the NWS coordinator for that whole region, who was tracking it, because it's, I mean, when a big storm comes in on their policies is all meteorologists on deck. Basically.
The National Weather Service
yes.
coordinator for the Gulf region is
yes.
located in Washington State.
Yes. Yes. One of them is, they have centers. They have hurricane centers.
Mm-hmm.
But their lead areas, there's like four strategic locations where NOAA is in place with FEMA, with everybody,
mm-hmm.
four doors down kind of thing. And those are the main command centers on the national level, and those are set up regionally throughout the nation.
I guess they won't get hit by the disaster they're reporting on.
That's
yeah.
right. That's
yeah,
exactly.
Don't get hit. That's part of it.
Yeah.
Safety in high places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The gist of my question was, in Atlanta, individual citizens organized themselves into an emergency response situation.
Yes.
And
right.
in... Sandy, Hurricane Sandy in New York,
right.
the same thing happened on a much more massive, extended
right.
scale.
Right.
Occupy Sandy was
mm-hmm.
there on the ground
right.
long before anybody else was,
right.
okay,
right.
including FEMA and the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what I was asking was, how do we catch up with that? How do we interface and connect with that? How does the official emergency management folks do that? How does community radio do that?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I would say that the way it's going to work here is, again, we've got 800 likes. We've got about 1% of the population that likes our Facebook page. During every disaster, it ticks up quite a bit more. We would be monitoring it as a way of gathering information. We would hope that, again, media looks at it and sees what we're saying via the Facebook page. That's, again, where, with our limited resources, we might have enough time to put a quick blurb out on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're monitoring our Facebook page, you'll get some information from us. You'll get some information possibly from the public. Mm-hmm. It'll be up to you to determine what you consider to be valid information. and that's a tough question during a dynamic situation like that.
I also have an outline of literally on the ground, you know, Birkenstocks on the ground, how to arrive on the scene properly and how to report. And it is a handout that we'll have up online. But basically, one of the reasons why we have our emergency management here is to get you familiar with the language and the amount and scope of services that are available, that would be even more available in a priority situation, so you can complete exactly what you were just describing. Mm-hmm. But when you take on that responsibility of building that relationship, you also need to know that how they will respond properly to your needs and requests and not treat you like some concerned citizen. Mm-hmm. So there's a credibility. What we're trying to do is I'm trying to bridge the gap between Joe Citizen and the emergency management situation. Mm-hmm. You are bound and obligated as broadcasters to provide emergency information, period. Okay. Now, how do you make that happen? This is how you make it happen. And have your managers come in and sit down and hang out. Honestly.
And, you know, we're talking about, you know, preparing for, emergencies way before they happen. It's really important to just have shows regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we have once a month, the volunteer firefighters have a show that they put together. Mm-hmm. Called Burning Matters. Mm-hmm. And most of the volunteer firefighters, some of them are volunteers at the radio station, some of them aren't, but they're our neighbors, right. They're our friends, we know them, they contribute to the pledge drive regularly. And so it starts with them, because mm-hmm. most of the fires or earthquakes or the emergency, they all have, respond to the first responders usually to mm-hmm. accidents on the highways. You know, we're a really rural area, and by the time, mm-hmm. Sometimes choppers have to get brought in to clean up, take people to bigger hospitals. But yes.
How do you handle a monthly show like that, schedule-wise?
Sunday afternoons, we have an hour and a half spot that we have rotating shows. Mm-hmm. We also have rotating call-in talk shows mm-hmm. Monday through Friday. And those shows, 7 to 8, there's a different show each. Once a week, let me think. So, like, on Monday, during the month of February, there'll be four or five different shows on that Monday in that time slot. So it opens up the microphone mm-hmm. for lots of different organizations. Mm-hmm. And on the environment show on Tuesdays, we have five different environmental groups that have those shows. Mm-hmm. So they rotate out. And so it's the same with the once-a-month Burning Matter show.
You know, we have a problem at our station where these programmers who come on once a month, they never get experienced enough and routinized enough to do good radio. Do you have more regular hosts who comes in and hosts these?
Yeah, we have hosts, yeah. One of, the hosts for the show is a regular programmer. So, mm-hmm. We just, please. But yeah, and they mm-hmm. bring in, they bring in people from emergency management. They bring in people from CAL FIRE. They, mm-hmm. They have regular interviews. So, and then, we have a lot of shows, both on the environment show and, on those shows, talking about how to prepare your land. People mm-hmm. that live in the woods, mm-hmm. there aren't, when lightning strikes, there's lots of houses out in the woods these days. Mm-hmm. So, bam, we try to get those fires out as fast as possible. Therefore, all of that undergrowth that ideally would be burned out if the mm-hmm. fire was allowed to burn doesn't get burnt out. So mm-hmm. we're constantly saying, you need to clean up. You need to, clean around your house. You need to clean up around your road and, just, trees dying from sudden oak death. You need to, clear them out. CAL FIRE making the rounds of rural areas. Well, hey, people are really uptight in Northern California about people in uniforms showing up. So we do a lot of stuff about, for years, CAL FIRE is cool.
Mm-hmm. You know, they don't care. They don't care what's in your garden.
Right. They're not the man, but they're the man when it comes to emergency.
Yeah, and in the neighborhood, you know, when they're in the neighborhood, people call. They go, okay, they were here, they were cool.
Right.
You know, but you know, I remember 4 or 5 years ago, people freaking out. My God, why would they want to come onto my property? And they, you know, they won't go through locked gates, but when they showed up at my place, they were amazingly helpful.
Yeah.
Just one real quick.
You're going to deal with people with wide variety of capabilities when it comes to presenting themselves and presenting a message on the radio.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe help them along. Hey, what message are you trying to get across?
That's right.
And then if you work with them, you can set them up to answer an important question by you asking the right question to them. It's for somebody that's not, hasn't had any PIO training to know how to present a message across
that's
to
right.
them.
Mm-hmm. I have a concrete question, Keith or anybody else. Is that your name?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You too.
ham radio.
Yes.
In real life, we've got a construction permit. We're building our station now, rural poor area, topsy turvy terrain. I've already run into one ham radio operator that's very, very interested in working with us.
Good.
And building towards a mutually respectful relationship with various emergency response people.
Mm-hmm.
But is that worth pursuing? I have
yes.
18
oh, very much so.
Bryce,
very, very
yeah, Bryce
so.
Doesn't
yes.
let anyone on his radio station
unless
after that
host
unless they're ham certified because he
yeah.
wants them to be able. So yeah, I think that's totally worth pursuing. We actually have a show once a month that's about ham radio and a ham radio
Bryce,
operator.
Bryce,
Bear, would you say that again?
I said, okay, which I said we have. Which
yeah,
one?
I thought I heard you say that you don't know anybody in the.
No, no, this guy
no.
Bryce that we're talking
Bryce,
about
yeah.
that was the only station on in Mississippi.
Okay.
Yeah,
he. His thing is you need to have it be a ham radio operator.
And look him up. It's Katrina Radio or Radio Katrina. I can't remember right now because I'm really tired. Bryce Phillips, working with people like Keith here, was a little low-power FM radio station where they had all of his programmers have to be ham certified before they can go on the air, okay? Okay, you want to talk rigid?
That's a little it's a tad rigid for me, but I definitely would not turn away someone because they're ham radio operators.
Yeah, but the moral to this story is that Bryce had a very tight working relationship with his emergency managers in Mississippi, right?
Mississippi.
Yeah. Okay. Had tight working relationship with them. Katrina hit, that's where Katrina hit ground zero. That was ground zero's hit. Every station was knocked off the air because he was working with the emergency managers and had this established relationship with Keith and put the DJs through all the disaster trainings. Your emergency management groups have disaster trainings that you can actually participate in. We did great chemical spills and stuff like that and reenacting in and really playing it out. And I always played the helpful but frantic. Helpful but frantic.
You're good at that.
When your ground people are on the ground, they're assessing their resources that they have right there. And they will, in certain emergencies, allow civilians to participate if the civilians know what the fuck they're doing, pretty much. And they will, you know, if you can do that. So I would always play this frantic way. But anyway, the deal with the relationship that was established with Bryce and the emergency managers was he was getting plowed by Katrina. And it was like, we're the only communication system to the public that we have in this area right now. They literally moved him up the mountain to their command center, all right,
mm-hmm.
and got a temporary authority to jump to 1,000 watts because he had the transmitter capability of doing so. And he went up to 1,000 watts and remained on the air because FEMA took some of their resources and engineers and moved them up the hill, okay?
So, and as a result of that, we don't know how many thousands of lives we saved as a result.
Yes. In Texas, we have citizen groups referred to as CERT. I think it's Community Emergency Response
DART
Team.
CERT, yes.
And so I would imagine that having at least some of them among our volunteers,
absolutely, yeah, with the program. That's exactly where we used to go play.
You had a question for us?
DART and CERT.
The FCC will temporarily allow a boost in power like that. Do they still stay on their only frequency? Or
yes.
Do they assume people can find them because they're the only one on?
Yes, because they're the only one on the air. And what happens when you're in frantic mode?
That's an extreme situation to get a boost in power.
That's incredible.
You don't have a situation like that today.
I also must include in there that Bryce Phillips is... very well connected politically, and so he knew the express lanes on how to do that. But maintaining and establishing that relationship with your SECCs, your DART, your CERT, your local fire chiefs and managers is probably the easiest thing you can do in order to gain your credibility, so you can go walking up on scene like I have outlined here, of getting to the scene, finding out who your PIO is or who your commander is that's handling inquiries.
So let's think, though, like, you know, your station's running and, you know, there's someone who's in there, like, once a week, you know, 8 o'clock at night or on a Saturday and, you know, and something major happens. There's a, you know, gas leak or something. Mm-hmm. They need to know. They need to know who to contact, how to put it out, and, you know, because, we have over 100 programmers mm-hmm. on the air, and some of them will know what to do, and no matter how much you tell them, the big sign, call this number first, then call this, then call that, call, you know, get this person in here. If you can't get this person, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. yes.
That's just an emergency plan, just like we tell anybody, you know. Right. If a business has it, what's your chain of command? Who has responsibility and authorities to mm-hmm. swap away from the regular schedule? Work that all out before.
Figure that out. Mm-hmm. You know, KMUD's news director worked that out with a bunch of volunteers. I can put that on the GRC thing. But you just need to figure out what makes mm-hmm. most sense for your station. Mm-hmm. You have one person volunteering 24/7 at your station. That's going to be that person who's going to have to deal with it. Right. But if you've got more,
I'm working on developing an emergency response plan at our station. Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit. This has given me a lot of inspiration to do more. But I want to emphasize that you may be in a position to do more, as I was a few years ago, working with another radio station. Mm-hmm. There's a commercial mm-hmm. community radio station mm-hmm. in our area that's been on the air, owned by the same family for 80 or 90 years, mm-hmm. that prides themselves on disaster response. Mm-hmm. They got an FCC clearance to go up to 50,000 watts broadcast live commercially during Tropical Storm Irene.
Absolutely.
And I worked with them,
absolutely.
And we got the word out. And I expect in our station's emergency response, we'll try to figure out some cooperation with them.
Yeah.
But what I could do at that time, somebody who already worked with them in other ways, mm-hmm. is just devote myself to them and get out to a wide area.
Exactly. And the first place to start, if there's anything that you take away from this session, is that you need to get in touch with your state broadcasters associations. Your state broadcasting associations have been doing this since the dawn of time. They've already established open relationships with most of the emergency management and services that are there. Okay? And you're going to be in touch with them anyway, because you have to get your signals coordinated when you program your EAS boxes. So you might as well start working on those relationships now. You want to write a disaster plan for your radio station?
Mm-hmm.
They've got them. You don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
And they'll show you how to do it, and they'll probably tell you what works and what doesn't work. So you're not...
We're members already.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if all the stations... I
highly recommend that you share.
Florida.
That's different from the SEC.
Florida?
Vermont.
Vermont, okay. Oh, yeah, Irene was up there. That's right. Yeah, that's
a completely different thing from the SECC you mentioned earlier.
Right. The State Emergency Communications Committee is a collaboration. It's a collaborative effort between what? FEMA, the broadcast associations, the press.
Okay.
It's actually a coalition of broadcast associations, FEMA and NOAA is the other one, because they're the three, they're the big three, Skagit, Lowell Kizo up there is one of the chief signal coordinators. And I worked very closely with Clay Freimold and everybody up there when I was at CHAOS. CHAOS was one of the first community radio stations in the state of Washington to carry the AMBER alerts when it was still in test mode, because our team worked to write some of the language that was then incorporated into the law in which we have AMBER alerts now. So that was a really fun and exciting time to be able to do that. And of course now it's evolved to Silver Alert, and that's the wandering me in 10 years, wandering down the street not knowing where I am. I don't know where I am now. I don't know what's different. I think I still know my name.
It's your social security.
But honestly, make those relationships. Invite your Keiths out to your station.
Get wind up radios into your listeners'
hands.
That's
right.
Give them away during pledge drives for pledges. Whatever it takes, get them to have and stress that. I mean, people just get used to being able to depend on their electricity. Obviously, live in Detroit.
Also, in an emergency, people can charge their phones off cars.
All
the power is out.
Yeah.
We can communicate with them streaming through their mobile devices.
Exactly. And so I have a whole step-by-step layout that should be retweaked. I think I'll send you a courtesy copy.
Yeah.
That if I'm missing anything, I would really appreciate the input. Don't take too much time, but if you need to, it would greatly help the broadcasters. It would greatly help the broadcasters to understand how that process works and how to get on the scene if necessary without sounding or looking or distracting, because then they got to worry about you. That's the other part of it. That's another key element that people like Keith would have to worry about. Oh my God, we've got reporters on the scene who don't know their ass from a hole in the ground.
Sometimes centers are set up for press stories.
Right.
Like when there's a big fire.
Right.
There's
right.
places to go, or like at 8:05, they'll notify you.
But you need to speak the language.
Inputs,
Right. You got to speak the language.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Just one last comment. We always make we have a statement, disasters start locally and they end locally. It's going to start with your local first responders, your local EMA, so get in contact with them. What we do here might be completely different in other places. And in the end, after the large, after NBC, CBS, and all those others are gone, it's going to be the locals that are going to still be communicating to try and put things back together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that the Mendocino County Sheriff said last week when being interviewed on KMA, the first thing he said was, when there's a crisis like this, the first thing I tell people is turn off your satellite radios and turn on your community radio station. Tune into KZYX in Mendocino, tune into KMUD, because both of our community radio stations were covering the area where the fire was. And then he mentioned a station on the coast that isn't community but is still community, even though it's commercial. But that was great, because it's the truth. It's, people might think, oh man, I can just, do Pandora, I can, listen to satellite, I can do this, but when the shit hits the fan, they're going to go, oh yeah, what was that station that really talks about what's happening right here? And that was happening on Mars.
Any questions, thoughts, ideas, hopes, dreams, desires?
Get on air.
I just wanted to thank you guys for reading it, because I was really interested in this session, because I shared my experience earlier, and I found myself in a situation where, what the hell do I do?
Right.
And so we were just, kind of winging it. And it just, you know, everything you guys have said here kind of reaffirms, you know, my feelings for, you know, what we did during our own circumstance, that, you know, hey, we were doing the right thing.
You were doing the right thing.
And the thing I share with everybody here is, if you find yourself in the midst of your own disaster where you're like, what the hell do I do? Don't be afraid to get out there and grab the information. Like, when the bridge collapsed where I was, like, they had this huge press area, like you were saying, with the scene. Everyone from CNN to Fox News.
Yeah, because it's moneymakers for them, but they don't care. No one even died in that, and they still care.
Once the excitement is over, it's up to us.
What I was saying is, what I did is, like, it even got to the point where they had police shut it down, so, like, if you live there, like, you couldn't, you know, but, like, here you have these major corporate...
Media crap that can get in there freely.
And, like, you know, me being the local broadcaster, like, you know, I brought down all my stuff and my credentials, and I told the cops who I was, and they were like, okay, go on through.
Absolutely.
And, like, what I did as a local, because on the riverbank, you had they all these, you know, corporate parrots of, you know, whatever, set up on the riverbank with their cameras and everything. And, like, regardless of what they were doing, I was there doing my thing. Like, if you watch CNN or Fox News or anybody, like, I'm walking across all their shots, so I'm taking
Hey, check me out, I'm on CNN tonight.
This is my community, man.
Exactly.
Hey, talk to me.
And that's the spirit. Yep. That's the exact spirit that you need.
And that's the thing. You got to have that spirit. You know what I'm saying? That it don't matter who the hell is there. Like,
that's right.
That's your community.
Right. That's,
you know,
right.
That's
right.
Your neighborhood. That's where you're from.
You're going to cover it real. You're not going to just do this spectacular crap.
Right.
Exactly. You're going to be down. You're going to be down, and you're going to be real, and you're going to be real with your people because you are a representation of your people.
And you know your people, and they don't.
Exactly, and they don't. And the other beautiful part of it is that when you establish these kinds of relationships with the emergency managers, and that you develop this trust and level of responsibility and duty of care is another line that I like to use a lot. When you exemplify that duty of care, you're building mutual respect, and they're free to be able to focus on the work that they need to do. You know, they don't have to worry as much because they know their work is being recorded by somebody who is credentialed, who is capable of handling the information that's coming out. Because when you do get on scene, there are sometimes, especially if you're down, if you're knee-deep, you're knee-deep. And some of those managers, as well as they hold it together, they're also in their moments. And sometimes that training doesn't always, when you're on, like, Los Alamos Fire, we had a manager who was on, he was on scene for almost 19 hours before he got on the break. By the time he was done, he said it was just like me. You know what I mean? I found the man. Yeah, but that's not, you know what I mean? You don't cover that. You cover the hours of work and how tired they are. Right? So you have this kind of thing. Because how do you handle crisis? Sometimes without training, you wig out. Even with the training, 19, 20, 27 hours, a colleague of mine from New York, who was assistant to Mayor Giuliani during 9/11, I talked to him backline on the phone after about 4.5 days, and he was like, bleh. You know, and it's like, okay, Tom, calm down. And first he was like, how the hell did you get a hold of me? Well, I'm a journalist, right? But it was like, and then just, you know, I mean, he was a fraternity brother, so, you know, we could speak some more, you know, confidently. But he was there with Mayor Giuliani throughout the whole day. And no sleep. In a week, he had 4 hours of sleep. You know.
What constitutes press credentials?
Getting to know your people.
Print up a thing with it and put it in laminate.
There is another step as far as credentialing, is that you want to get with your sheriff's office and your police and fire departments. and you give them a mugshot of yourself. That's a real good way to start getting credentials. But the best way to do it is establish relationships. That's the only way you're going to get your street creds. It's just like the hip-hop world or any other world that you're going to, even in the broadcasting world, okay? Even in the broadcasting world, LPFM, you got to build your creds. You just build your creds. That's the way to do it, you know? And training. Participate in these trainings. Get to know your SCCC chairs. Okay, because they're throwing down, you know, at least once every 6 months, there's some opportunity that you could throw a station party at and have all your station volunteers participate in these simulated disasters. They do simulated disasters. It's one hell of an experience. It's great to bond your volunteers, but not only is it great to bond your volunteers, It's a great show of presence to the emergency managers who are saying, oh my gosh, we don't have the resources. Who do we have? What do we know? Who's going where? Who's on first? If you show up on scene, they know they've got at least one end covered, that the public's going to be competently and confidently alerted and made aware.
So we've got like 7 minutes for the questions coming in. Thank you. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you so
much
for
joining
us. Yeah, really.
I appreciate
great.
The opportunity.
Please stay for lunch if you want, or if you've got to fly.
I
understand.
Sunday morning, I bet you got to fly.
No
harm,
no foul.
I've got a friend in the hospital.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, thank you.
No problem.
Thank you so much.